Welcome to episode 198 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Al Guido about the 49ers, Levi Stadium, and the newly launched Elevate Sports Ventures.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who will be in Dallas for SEAT this July, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I will be in Dallas for SEAT 2018 this July. I'm looking forward to catching up with familiar faces and a few new ones. If you have not yet secured your spot for SEAT Dallas, please do so. Go to the SEAT website. SEATcommunity.com is the website, and check it out and book in. I'll be doing my Digital to Dollars workshop that I trialed this week. Did the first version of it this week at Punt Road Oval. Did it as a keynote / workshop. Really happy with the response. So book in for SEAT Dallas. As always, my name is Sean Callanan. You're listening to Sports Geek. You can contact me anytime via email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or via Twitter @SeanCallanan@SportsGeek will get me. Or you can hit me up on the Sports Biz Slack anytime @SeanCallanan on most platforms. If you want to book in for a time for a chat, just simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/work. I love helping podcast listeners. This chat with Al Guido, president of the San Francisco 49ers and CEO of Elevate Sports Ventures. So this episode does qualify as part of our CEO series. I caught up with Al at Levi Stadium on my recent trip to San Francisco to talk about his career in sports and how he found his way to the 49ers and the evolution of the 49ers, going from Candlestick Park to the tech-savvy Levi Stadium, and what it was like in that time moving to a new stadium and rolling out the tech, and then how do you keep a tech stadium up to date. And then we also discuss the new venture of Elevate Sports Ventures. So this is my chat at Levi Stadium with Al Guido, president of the San Francisco 49ers.
Very happy to be here in Santa Clara, California, in the bowels of the Levi Stadium, home of the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm here with president of the San Francisco 49ers, Al Guido. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Very happy to be back here. As I said, we're just talking that back then. I've got a tour of Levi Stadium when it was still bright and shiny and new back in 2015 with the SEAT conference, and then saw it in action with WrestleMania, an amazing venue. Before we jump into Levi Stadium, so I love going back into the background and how people got here. What's your sports business story?
Yeah, I'll try to make it short for you. I've been in the industry a little over 15 years now. I grew up in South Jersey. I was a Philadelphia sports fan. I went to work for my hometown teams, the Philadelphia Flyers and Philadelphia 76ers. Moved on to do some minor league baseball. Jumped over to sell some tickets for the Phoenix Coyotes. Selling hockey in the desert is unique.
Yep.
Then I got the opportunity to go work for Jerry Jones at Cowboys Stadium. From that, we started a company called Legends. Legends was a sports sales consulting firm. Jed York hired us in late 2009 to focus on a stadium that was potential to be built in Santa Clara, California. I stayed here from 2010 through 2014 as an employee of Legends. In 2014, I was brought on board from Legends to the 49ers to be the team's chief operating officer. And then after Super Bowl 50, so I guess roughly February 2015, I was named president of the team.
So, you know, I love the fact that you had that sales focus early on. You know, people saying, "How do I get into sports? If you can sell tickets, if you can get the cheeks in the seats, you'll be in the sports business for a long time." That sort of held you in good stead early on.
It's exactly what held me in good stead. I mean, when I got into the industry, well, when I was in college back up, there wasn't as many sports management programs as there are today. Yep. You know, I always say that the sports business was kind of like movie theaters. You open up your doors and people would come.
Yep.
And now it's changed dramatically. I mean, they've become big businesses. And so I took a job when I got out of college on Wall Street for American Express. I was going to be a financial advisor. My dad called and told me that the Philadelphia 76ers were hiring for a $6 an hour part-time job selling tickets out of the basement of the Philadelphia Spectrum.
And the glamour of sports.
That's it. And so I took a three-month gamble on a sports sales job and then stayed in that vertical throughout my career. I would say Legends was really the part that helped, you know, rocket launch or jumpstart my career, because I got out of, I still stayed in the sales vertical, but I got to know a lot more about stadium infrastructure, building technology, and that really helped me.
And so that's a perfect match for what this building is. So you're working in, working with Jed and working on the move from Candlestick, you know, much beloved stadium. You know, I was lucky enough to go to a preseason game there, like in the last season, and a much loved stadium. And then moving the whole team, everything to this new stadium, so close to Silicon Valley, the mesh of sports and tech. Just it had to happen in this venue, didn't it?
That's exactly right. I mean, we wanted to be the physical manifestation of Silicon Valley. You know, when people think about Silicon Valley, they certainly think about the tremendous technology companies here. We wanted to be a beacon for that. We thought we could, you know, leverage our assets at the 49ers, leverage the stadium to bring in great tech partners. We built the stadium on really three pillars. I would say fan experience, technology, and sustainability. Those were sort of our three core principles whenever we would make a decision. So when I got here in 2010, most people thought it would never happen. I mean, we had passed, the San Francisco 49ers had passed two ballot measures prior, never got a stadium built. We were the first stadium built in California in 50 years.
Yep.
And so you really had to think outside the box. You couldn't just think about how you were going to operate 10 or 12 days a year. We wanted to make this a multi-purpose facility. We like to think that we're a sports and entertainment company that also plays football.
Yep.
And I think we've accomplished that. Now the question is, as we head into year five, what changes are we going to make to keep up with that pace? Because technology continues to rapidly change day to day.
Well, that's definitely the thing. Because like when starting out and, you know, putting down the plans both of the physical building, but then the tech from the, you know, the ticket experience and how the tickets and the app integrates, food ordering, you had to do a lot of, you know, future, like looking in the future and saying, well, where will these fans be? How will they be interacting? How do we want them to interact? How's the experience going to be different? You've got to rewire all the fans. Like they've been going to Candlestick Park, going to the same spot, driving to the same spot, going to the same seat. How much of that was trying to, one, get them all to move here, but then to say this is going to be a totally different experience?
Well, you had to rewire the game day experience in the stadium operations world because obviously we're 50 miles south of where we were. Now, I'll tell people that we are actually closer to the majority of our fans. 7% of our season ticket holders actually lived in San Francisco when we played there. So yep. We were moving a lot closer to our fans. The traffic and transportation routes were something that they were looking forward to. On the technology front, I would just say that we were getting with the times. Yep. I mean, you've been to Candlestick. You literally couldn't connect to your device. You couldn't send a text. You couldn't download information on the internet. You couldn't, you know, certainly upload a video and send it out. I mean, so much of the sports world is dramatically changing. And we were coming along at a great time when mobile apps and technology was something that you had to do, or people would just stay home at their couch.
Yeah, and it was starting to become, you know, I remember the conversations at conferences in 2010, 2011. It was like, how do we get Wi-Fi in?
That's right.
And then by, you know, 2013, 2014, Wi-Fi was just a utility. We can't have, you know, they're like restrooms. We have to have them. It's expected by the fans. And so Levi opened at that right time when all of this tech had started being signed off, and the idea of what fans wanted and how you can integrate sponsors and those kind of things, they were happening in different stadiums in piecemeal, and you're able to put the total stadium tech package together.
That's exactly. I mean, we came along at a really good time for what I would say two reasons. One, stadium technology and fiber and infrastructure was dramatically changing overnight, and DAS systems and Wi-Fi installations. And then the second part is we got really lucky to be in the Bay Area when it relates to people. We were able to hire tremendous people to work on our tech infrastructure. I mean, we literally hired the person who built the Facebook's underlying tech infrastructure. And he came up with an idea with Aruba to do the first ever underseat Wi-Fi installation.
Yep.
And that really changed the game, because the whole problem is, how do you get 70,000 fans connected to a device? It was both a math equation and a technology, you know, challenge. And so for us, I think we figured that out. And then when you lay the app on top of it, it gives you so many opportunities to connect with your fans. I talk about it in the world where sports in stadium used to be so much push marketing. You'd look at a big board, you just push it out to all 70,000. Now it's a little bit of pull, right? Because fans can just decide what they want to interact with, right? Or what data points they want, or what players they want to follow, or what food they want to order. And I felt like the landscape of sports was changing, and you're right. We came along at the right time relative to technology, relative to stadium development, and relative to finally, you know, actually what fans wanted in venue.
Yeah, and then you've got the analytics of what the fans are doing. I remember talking to the guys after Super Bowl 50 and them saying, well, this is what the fans were doing. There was as much uploading and outward traffic as there was inbound traffic, because it's a, you know, it's a look at me moment. Yeah. And the fact that the infrastructure's there, you're allowed to, you know, it allows it to happen. But when you're in those stadiums that didn't have that Wi-Fi, it didn't get out.
No, you see it now. I mean, in the mandates that the NFL is putting on all these new venues, and then the retrofits for all of these other stadiums. I mean, it's, you know, we're going through adding pieces of Wi-Fi and DAS and upgrading some of our systems, and we're only in year five.
Yep.
And most of that is due to the upload traffic. I mean, the amount of videos, or, you know, whatever social, you know, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, whatever one you like, you know, the upload traffic that people are sending out into the world, and the video and the capture rate is challenging on these buildings. And so we're doing a lot on our infrastructure to make sure that we keep up with the times.
And it was funny, especially when the streaming services like Periscope and Meerkat came out, so many of the vendors and the rights holders were like, we don't want these fans sharing this content because, you know, it's going to affect TV rights and things like that. When, you know, looking back, it's like, well, hang on, this is sharing the live experience. Around the world, you've got this problem of people turning up to live. We want to show how awesome the live experience is. We want to enable that for fans.
Couldn't agree more. I used to cringe when people said that. Yeah. And we would argue with the NFL that we thought it was a good thing. I mean, why not have millions of content creators? What's so wrong with that? I in my world, you know, you want to get content in the hands of the fans wherever you can. And if your fans are the ultimately now helping you create content, which drives an atmosphere and experience that people want to go to because they see how amazing it is.
Yep.
What's so wrong? And so I think it's a constant battle between rights holders, you know, whether they be teams or leagues,
yep,
and fans. And it's going to change. I mean, you already see it in broadcast linear television. Is, you know, what I say is the eyeballs are the same. They're just scattered.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And so, because I think it's very different than before. It's shifting, right? Where you and I might have grown up and HD television came out, we were like, oh my God, I'm not coming off my couch.
Yeah.
My 9, 7, and 5-year-old, they don't even watch the television anymore. They're on their devices or they're streaming content, right? They want live experiences, actually shifting back into the live world, which is really, really neat for all of these venues. It's why I'm so excited about our season and then our future.
And that's the thing. These new fans, these, you know, ever elusive millennials, right? That everyone says they're really hard to get to. They don't watch TV anymore. They don't have emails. But it's like, but they are consuming the content. They're just doing it in a completely different manner. And if they start watching these little snippets, they will come back to the big screen.
1,000%. 1,000%. And they love social experiences. I think, you know, two weeks ago, we had a conference here, Business Strategy Analytics Conference. And I watched a gentleman from Populous, one of the lead architectural firms, get up and present the stadium of the future. And the stadium of the future was very different than it is today. There was a lot more communal spaces. They were taking down the brick and mortar walls that existed when we built stadiums before.
Yep.
Right. And I just think that's where sports is headed. And the one thing I love about being in sports, it is the social experience. It's probably the last place in the world where you can sit next to a complete stranger, and within 5 minutes, you're high-fiving each other, as long as you're wearing the same colors.
Yeah.
Right. And to me, that's what's special about live sports. And we need to hold on to that. But in the NFL, I can't ask somebody to be part of a 6-hour experience and be disconnected from their phone or the world.
Yep.
They're just not going to come.
Yeah, and it's a sport that lends itself to having those downtimes to, one, I want to check that highlight, or I want to tell my friend, or I want to message a friend on the other side of the stadium. It's not that constant have to watch every minute, because it's got those spots. And sports like the NFL, like baseball, have those downtimes where people are going to pull out. They're going to second screen the live experience.
That's right. And so much of it, too, as you know, is the utility functions, right? I mean, we talk a little bit about where mobile ticketing was and now where it is today, right? We're lucky in the sense of we have roughly 60% of our fans that enter on mobile devices. That will now go to 100 with the change in where the NFL is headed for removing all paper tickets for security purposes. But what else can you do long term, right? I mean, we do parking and tickets, food and beverage and retail. But what other points of sale? You know, this week there's been a lot of talk on gambling and where the future of that might go. And so, look, I don't know what the answers are. None of us do. But what we all know is we need to build the infrastructure to be able to handle some of these tremendous fan experience changes within our game. And you're right. Our game lends itself to a lot of downtime in between plays. And we used to joke, will it be a day where fans vote on what the next play is?
Yep.
And who knows where it goes? I just think for us, it was build the infrastructure to be able to withstand where that heads in the future.
I really like the point you make around utility, especially around an app that's stadium-based or team-based, because there's so many apps in the App Store, right? There's really no reason to download any more apps. We're sort of like, the store's full, you know, and I constantly ask people, when was the last time you downloaded an app? And most people, you know, they have to really think about it because they have their social networks and they have the messaging platforms. It's like, why am I downloading the app? And so from a team stadium point of view, you have to provide this super compelling utility, whether it's we'll help you get to the parking, it'll have your ticket to actually be there because you're competing with so many other apps.
Yeah, I told people in the very beginning that if we were just content app, then we should just partner with somebody who has a really good content app or give a good content aggregator to go. And so for me, the only way to get complete usage, right, is to provide a utility to the fans. And a lot of people in the very beginning thought, oh, you're just doing mobile tickets because it's cheaper. Look, it's not very expensive to print tickets. What we're doing it for is safety purposes. We're also doing it because the future, as you just mentioned, is right. Now we can proactively communicate to someone what roads are shut down, what gates might be easier to access, right? If you think about it, the last time you went to an airport, if somebody were to tell you, hey, go to this gate because you won't have to wait 10 minutes, you'd be happy, right? You already download the mobile ticket on your phone. And so for me, it's sports just catching up with where everything else is headed. And if I can get my what I need in an on-demand world whenever I need it on my phone, I'm happy.
And the thing that it does then provide you is that data of who's got that ticket, and then you can start that conversation, and that's where the app can start morphing to go, oh, Al, I know when you turn up to a game, I know what side of the stadium you're on, and that geo-based offers, time-based offers, that kind of thing, because you're getting better information on those people.
We're getting in real time, and we run our game days in real-time data and analytics. I mean, whether it's restroom cleanups, whether it's food and beverage orderings, whether it's gate management, whether it's the security pieces to it, I say I use sort of offensive and defensive, to use a sports analogy. On the offensive side, you know, for us, we want to give you the marketing materials that you ultimately want.
Yep.
On the defensive side, look, I always say the biggest threat to our game is if something were to happen in one of our stadiums. And it's to think just 4 or 5 years ago, we only knew 19,000 of the 70,000 people in venues. Scary.
Yeah,
and what's going on in the world today, obviously the attack in Manchester, I think, woke all stadiums up. The attack in Las Vegas, right?
Yep.
How do we protect our patrons is number one on the defensive side. And then how do we as an operator get much smarter relative to how we operate a game day? And, you know, to me, that's food spoilage. That's the gate stuff that I mentioned. So we look at it as what does the fans want, you know, in front of their face? And then how do we as a stadium operator, run our game day more efficiently.
Yep. One of the things, and again, it's in that app marketing space. One of the things I love when I came to Levi is being a geek myself is the Geek Squad, right? Actually helping people. This is why you have the app, you know, because the easiest thing to do is to go, hey, we've got a new bright, shiny app. Cool. Tick that box and it's done. And it's like, oh, hang on. We need to keep telling people about what this app does, the new features that get rolled out, and having people like the Geek Squad there helping people get on board, you know, it definitely helps the experience.
Yeah, we knew when we started Venue Next, we knew that there was going to be a challenge in the mindset of fans. And all you needed to do was look at how many people wanted to still use paper tickets.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself told you, hey, we really need to educate people on how to use these. And then we needed to work with Ticketmaster, who was our ticketing partner, to make sure that you're getting barcodes, which we can have a whole long discussion around where barcodes go and the fact that they're no longer be there. And will it be biometrics, which is already happening? But we had the Geek Squad there to tell people why that they should download it. Because I think, look, we all have this fear, right? And you saw this a little bit with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica. Mm-hmm. Is if I download this app and I give you my information, what ultimately is happening with it? And so for me, what you talked about is the way we wanted to see the world, which is, look, we would love you to use your mobile ticket, but here's why.
Yep.
We would love you to log on and give us your information because we would love to know where you're coming from so that we can give you information to get to the stadium faster. So for us, is as long as we were able to tell fans the reasons why we wanted them to do it, they were willing to download it, but we had to get in front of them versus just sending out marketing material to say, download this app.
Yep. And so in the years since opening Levi, what are some of the things you've learned and how has the stadium and also the tech picture evolved? Because as you said, it's moving so fast. You can't say, cool, we're done. The 2015 version of what we've done is good for the next 5 years because the landscape keeps changing. What are some of the things you've learned over the last couple of years?
Well, the interesting parts of some of them are non-technology focused, right? The parking and transportation is still probably the biggest issue for fans, right?
Yep.
In our stadium and probably stadiums all across the world, is you need to do as best you job as you possibly can, reducing the amount of cars, pushing your public transit options, working with your partners, you know, whether it be Uber or Lyft or whoever it might be on ride sharing to figure out how that world works. Because look, if you have a bad experience the first hour or hour and a half that trying to get into the stadium, it doesn't really matter what's in between that 4 hours. So I would tell you that's the number one piece. Food and beverage is a big issue, and it was a big issue in our stadium. We just changed out food operators. So that's going to be important for us as we look to the future. And then on the app side, the question becomes is how much time and energy do we spend on today's ticketing world versus the future of the ticketing world?
Yep.
And I mentioned the biometrics piece because we partner with a company, Identigo, which is known around the United States as TSA sort of pre-check, right?
Yep.
And for us, it becomes, how does that experience change? Because we're now, our wait time at the gates is roughly 6 to 8 minutes. Can we reduce that to 4, to 3, to 2 based off the information that we get? So that's the pieces that we're really looking into.
And that's going to be a really interesting piece because, again, it comes down to that, you know, personalized security piece. And it's like, well, this is why we need this biometric data.
Correct.
It'll mean you can get through security quicker, but also make for a safer stadium and we'll know more about the people that are coming in. It stops a lot of ticket fraud and those kind of things because it's the tickets tied to you.
That's exactly right. And we want to get to a point where no matter if the ticket's tied to you and if you transfer it to me, that we can always follow that ticket, right?
Yep.
In a virtual way. And so the good news about an NFL team, especially for us, I mean, we're lucky in the sense that 95-96% of our building is sold on season tickets, right?
Yep.
So for the most part, the same people are coming to the games every single Sunday or Thursday or Monday.
Yep.
And if we can get people going in on biometrics and create sort of fast pass lanes or whatever we decide to call them, I do think it'll aid the experience long term. And then there's all kinds of things that we're thinking about from an app creative perspective on how we share information and do replays. We work with Intel on the True View, right? The 360 angle. Can we get that into fans' hands faster? So there's a number of different plays that we're working on. You know, but I would say most of it is in the utility space because that is what affects a fan's experience from, you know, from the start to, you know, the finish.
The good thing is at least you're not setting that all up from scratch. Like they've got the experience that they've got in the airport and they're like, oh, so that's a faster line. I'll sign up for this faster line. And so you can pitch it in that way as it's not completely new. So like that, you've got that advantage coming at it.
No, I mean, look, and that's where we got the idea on the food and beverage delivery or the, you know, or to order to the stand and go pick it up. I mean, you know, I think Jed brought up the fact that he went to Melt one day, which is, you know, a grilled cheese there. And you can order beforehand and go pick it up.
Yep.
And you've seen all of the points of sale change. You know, if you're just a consumer, right? I mean, you see it in retail spaces, you see it in food and beverage, you see it in airports. However you interact with places changed dramatically. I mean, we're talking right now about, you know, one of our partners, Amazon, is thinking about, you know, do you just walk into a concession stand and walk out?
Yep.
And do you ever even pull out your wallet? And these are the things that I, because if you can remove friction, right, or the time someone spends at a counter to pull out their wallet and check out and pay.
Yep.
You know, that's what it is for us. It's all just speed of service. Because if we can get to a point where we can remove enough friction, we'll never have to worry about building, you know, a smaller stadium.
Yeah.
The experience will be good enough that we can actually get 70,000 people here.
So you're taking in a lot of lessons and insights from this stadium, but also as part of Venue Next, you're also got apps and working with other partners and other teams around the US. So what insights are you getting from those partners to sort of weave in for that total picture?
It just depends on who the partner is. So Venue Next has done a really nice job. I mean, we're proud of what we built. And what we didn't want to do is we didn't want to just build a better mousetrap. So we felt like we built an app that tied all points of sale together because that's what teams needed. You needed a 360 view of each individual fan. But then we used other partners that we thought did a good job in some of those other spaces. And it depends on the sport. Obviously, if you're in the NBA or in Major League Baseball, what you're really trying to solve for is the fact that you have 40-some games or 80 games. And how do I create a world where fans have a loyalty program where they feel like they can still buy season tickets and get value of it and don't have wasted cards? I think Venue Next will tell you the Magic do something where you can turn tickets in, get Magic Bucks, do all those things. So what I would tell any rights holder or content person or team is if you think about Venue Next, think about it in an open source world where, hey, what are my problems today? What am I trying to solve? What's the future of my business look like? And they do a pretty good job building an application that I think is unique to each individual team.
And so that leads us to the Elevate Sports Ventures that's recently launched. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, what that is, the genesis of that, and sort of what you're trying to achieve out of Elevate?
Certainly. So Elevate Sports Ventures is a partnership between Harris Blitzer Sports Entertainment, which is the parent company of the Philadelphia 76ers and the New Jersey Devils, and Crystal Palace, and a bunch of others.
Yep.
And CAA, Creative Arts Agency. And we're soon to announce some new partners that we're excited about. But really, it started off with Scott O'Neill and I have been friends for a long time in this industry. We have a venture arm here at the San Francisco 49ers where we've invested in roughly 40 companies in the last 2 years, and same with Harris Blitzer. And so we were talking to the same startups, the same technology firms. And so finally we said, listen, we think we could partner up on a sports sales consulting arm that we do think could aid teams. And if you think about Scott's experience at the league and in the arenas, my kind of background relative to sales and big stadiums, there is more money being spent today on renovations and new stadiums than ever been before.
Yep.
And with that, the risk is greater than it ever was before. I mean, if you just think about down in LA, they're about to spend $4.5 to $5 billion to build a stadium.
Yeah.
And that's more than people do to buy a team in the NFL. And so I think with that comes an experience that if you've done it before, people are interested in talking to you more because the risk portfolio has risen. So we're really excited about it. We got clients right now in every sport. And I think it's been a great sort of 90 days since we launched.
Well, terrific. And at the moment, your, you know, projections and where you think it might be, is a little bit of see what those clients want, to sort of what that big picture is and where you actually will position Elevate.
Yeah, I mean, right now I couldn't be, honestly, I didn't think 90 days into it that we would have as much in our world as we do today. We're staffing up, we're hiring people to be able to handle, frankly, just the bandwidth that we need to service all these accounts. And I think what we found is there's two spaces. There's the sales and operational space for some of these clients, but then there's the operational business intelligence space. And I think where we've done well at the 49ers, we have the largest business intelligence team in all of sports.
Yep.
And when we go show people the data and the graphics and how we operate our venue, they say, hey, I want that.
Yep.
Well, we say, well, to get that, you got to really invest in a number of different things before you get there, right? The business strategy analytics team can only pull that data if you have it.
Yep.
And so that's where we thought, hey, as a partner, we can really show people how we were able to get to where we got today. Because look, it's 8 years in the making since I really got on the ground here. And I think where we found is sports teams are becoming much smarter in how they operate their venues. They're also thinking about the technology world. They're also trying to develop land in and outside of their facility. So it's just dramatically changed from where it was then to where it is now. And like I said, I think we found a space that we feel like we can be really successful and help Landmark properties do a better job thinking about how do they monetize their sport or their team.
And it's definitely in that part of where else is the revenue in sports. You know, we have Man City just a couple of weeks ago say their second biggest product other than football is content, right? And it's the content that they produce and how they leverage their sponsors. But, you know, the other part of it is, you know, I like to describe what you're talking about, that business analytics is the money ball side, but on the business of sport, right? That's such a growing area. How can we maximize our opportunity with our customers? But then what are these offshoots that are in the football or non-football revenue where you're being in startups, working in innovation labs, all that kind of stuff that sports are doing as a byproduct of what they're trying to do to win games on the field and, you know, have a good business that the corporate world, you know, want to be part of. So there's so much opportunity in that space.
Tons of opportunity. And I would say without giving away any of our clients, I'll talk a little bit about the 49ers in this space. And so we've thought about it the same way, right? I mentioned a little bit that we view ourselves as a sports entertainment company. So talked a little bit about the investments. We're about to open up a fitness gym. We have two physical therapy centers. We have a STEAM education group. We've purchased a youth sports content company. And so for us, we've thought about our brand in sort of a 360 world, right? We think the 49ers can leverage a number of different things. We're in sports, we're in content, we're in food and beverage, we're in technology. And so why at times write checks to others where we can use our brand to develop those, right? Or partner with, you know, startups or legacy-based technology companies to go to market with a different product. And we've been really successful here. Shoot, we have a restaurant, 365, going on and on. We've been really successful taking the 49ers brand, our consumers, our fan base, our data, and thinking about our both local reach and our global reach and monetizing that.
Well, terrific. I want to finish off with the SportsGate Closing Five. Do you remember your first sports event you ever attended?
My first professional sport I ever attended, I don't remember the year. I do remember it was a Philadelphia 76ers game. It was in the old Philadelphia Spectrum, which does not exist today. They knocked it down. My father was a massive Julius Erving fan. I was more of a Mo Cheeks guy because I played point guard, and so Mo Cheeks was my guy.
So that would have been the Dr. J, Moses Malone, Mo Cheeks.
Yeah, Dr. J, Moses Malone, Andrew Toney. Yeah, you know, all the teams in the 80s where the Sixers were really good. It's funny to see the Sixers and Celtics now going back.
Because that's where they were back in the
day. Because that's what it was.
Back in the day, it was them versus Larry Bird.
Andrew Toney was nicknamed the Boston Strangler.
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
Probably not
right.
Politically correct, but that was his nickname.
You would have been to a lot of sports events in your time in your career in sports. Do you have a favorite food memory at a sports event or just some crazy food that you've been offered?
I don't have any crazy food offerings. Yeah. My favorite, this shouldn't surprise anybody on this podcast. Listen, I'm from Philadelphia, South Jersey area. So anytime you can give me a Philly cheesesteak, I'm happy.
Yeah, there you go. I think I have to pay Roger $5. He said that will be the
Philly cheesesteak. I'm happy. It just depends on how you order it is the question. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Wall Street Journal.
So a bit of brain food to begin the day?
I like to start my day with a little bit of knowledge about what's going on in the world.
Terrific. Is there someone that you follow or read or you admire that you suggest that the podcast listeners should follow?
Oh, wow.
Is there a favorite author?
No, not Simon Sinek is by far and away my favorite author. I've obviously read both of his books or all three of his books, and he's got a new book coming out. He is not only a friend, but he actually we do some work with him at the 49ers on culture.
Okay.
Him and his company come in on a yearly basis and do some management training for us. So he's a tremendous person to listen to.
He definitely is. He's actually been nominated before. So what social media platform is your MVP? And so you can answer that personally, but then also Yeah, put your 49ers hat on, and what's the platform that works well for the 49ers?
I think Meg Ryan would tell you Facebook's our largest platform.
Yep.
And I would like, you know, as we continue the path down with the NFL, I'd like to see the NFL and us and Facebook get a closer relationship relative to the content that we share.
It's going to be really interesting to see where Facebook, as it's pivoting to be more of a media company and coming to the party and wanting to buy rights, where they're live streaming Facebook Watch, where how that product evolves, because that's going to be super critical for them as a platform, but then to also keep those fans connected.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, I can go on my soapbox on this, but if you look at Tom versus Time, right?
Yeah.
I think what fans are screaming for is more behind the scenes content and access, right? They're going to watch the games.
Yep.
But they really want unique content shared with them on these platforms. And I argue that we as a team and brand aren't doing enough of that. We can always do more. So I would say Facebook in that regard, if I put my 49ers hat on. My own personal hat's probably Twitter.
Yep.
Because of a news perspective, to me, it's the easiest searchable news. I create my list. I go check it out.
Yep.
I feel like I'm smart within 30 seconds. Probably not the right thing to do, but that's how I feel.
That's pretty much how, you know, Twitter has got live and it the news journalist space. If something's breaking, that's where you go. And so it is a really, you know, and I was talking to a few other people, the fact that a little bit of the algorithm, you know, you open up in the morning and says, Al, here's what you missed. And you're like, actually, I did want to read all of those.
It's exactly right. I mean, I think about, you know, whether it's the sports world, whether it's the outside world, it's the technology. I literally within probably, let's just call it a half hour, can get a pretty good download of what's going on in the world.
Well, that's terrific. Where can people find you on the internet if they wanted to connect?
Oh, on the internet, if you want to connect, I have a LinkedIn account that's just Al Guido. I have a Twitter account that's at Al Guido. So if you want to connect with me, just, you know, send me notes on those.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much for having me here, and I look forward to seeing how Elevate goes.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Download our Facebook campaigns guide at sportsgeekhq.com/FBcampaigns.
Thanks again to Al Guido. You can send him a tweet, Al Guido, G-U-I-D-O. Send him a tweet, tell him that you listened to this episode, and keep an eye out for what Elevate Sports Ventures are up to. Thank you very much to Roger Hacker from the 49ers for helping set up this interview. It was good that I was able to reschedule it for when I was in San Francisco. I much prefer doing the interviews in person. I'm recording this in Cairns, far north Queensland, Australia, after doing the final Sport and Rec conference in Cairns. And it's been a busy traveling period recently. Got back from Montreal on Monday, and as I said at the top, I did my first session of the Digital to Dollars workshop, working through the different parts of the book that I'm working on. But I want to give a little bit of a recap of C2 Montreal. I had an absolute blast. I really can't recommend it as a conference enough, and I really think the word conference doesn't do it justice. For those of you who have been listening and know, so C2 is built. Founded by the guys from Cirque du Soleil, and so it's a mix of keynote, panel discussions, Brain Labs, which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the Brain Labs, and then Brain Dates. And Brain Dates are one of the things that I think I really got the most out of. It's something that I do, I guess, in real life a lot. Have a lot of coffees, had a lot of chats with people. The Brain Date functionality by the guys at E180 was really good. It was effectively like Tinder for your brain. You can nominate different topics you wanted to chat about, and people would nominate their topics. And so you could pick and choose, hey, I want to meet, nominate some times, find a time, and lock in for a half hour chat. And so, you know, I had some really good chats with Micah and Sheldon and Jonathan, who I hope to have on the podcast from the Canadians. Caroline, Irvy. So I think I did about 12 or 15 brain dates and a few around the brain date lounge. I think I was pretty well known. So thank you to Sylvain and the guys at E180 for being so welcoming. I really enjoyed the brain dates functionality and just what it offered to the conference experience. And so if you're a conference organizer or you're looking to, if you've got an event and you're looking to engage your participants, I highly recommend checking them out. I'm happy to pass on their details. And looking forward to C2 Melbourne in October 17 to 19. Should be a lot of fun. So that's it. It's a bit of my recap of C2, and sort of been on the speaking circuit recently, doing the last of the Queensland Sport and Rec. If you're looking for a speaker, whether it be for a conference or you want to work a workshop, or you know, one of the things I do talk a lot of people about is I'm very good as a bit of a circuit breaker. If you want to sort of change things up and look to enact a bit of change in your digital commercial sponsorship marketing department, and you want a fresh voice in there, and it might be a voice that's saying the same things, but sometimes an external voice can be that circuit breaker. You know, so whether it's in a keynote type form, you can look at what I've done from a keynote public speaking point of view by going to sportsgeekhq.com/keynote, or let's just get on a call and figure out how I can help and how I can help digital. And the thing that I try to dive in on, a lot of people come to me and say, hey, we need help with our social media. I'm always happy to help and advise teams and brands on what they're doing in the social media space. But what I love diving in on is how can we make more money? How can we help you and your business drive more results? I'd much rather see digital teams get the kudos for driving more revenue for their team or their event than getting likes and getting viral content. And it really changes the focus of what you're trying to do. I still love creating cool content and seeing it go viral. But I wanted to make sure that everything that gets done has that end game in mind. And that end game might be driving more people into your stands, might be more registrations, it might be getting more corporates involved with what you're trying to do. But that's the focus I take. And so if you want to change things up and have your team thinking that way, I'm more than happy to chat about how we can help you. As always, you can get in touch with me at Sean Callanan on Twitter, on Slack, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. And as always, you can just simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call and effectively book a brain date, because I really did enjoy the process at C2. Until next time, my name is Sean Callanan and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. Please share your fave episodes of Sports Geek on LinkedIn. Be sure to tag Sean Callanan.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
Want to chat with Sean? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.